The reading actually starts on page 7, so I'm reading from Genesis chapter 8, verse 13, through to chapter 9, verse 11. So 8:13. In the 601st year, in the first month, the first day of the month, the waters were dried from off the earth. And Noah removed the covering of the ark and looked, and behold, the face of the ground was dry. In the second month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth had dried out. Then God said to Noah, "Go out from the ark, you and your wife and your sons' wives with you. Bring out with you every living thing that is with you of all flesh, birds and animals, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, that they may swarm on the earth and be fruitful and multiply on the earth." So Noah went out, and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him. Every beast, every creeping thing, and every bird, everything that moves on the earth went out by families from the ark. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took some of every clean animal and some of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And when the Lord smelt the pleasing aroma, the Lord said in his heart, "I will never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I ever again strike down every living creature as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease." And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every bird of the heavens, upon everything that creeps on the ground and all the fish of the sea. Into your hand they are delivered. Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. And as I gave you the green plants, I give you everything. But you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood. And for your lifeblood I will require a reckoning. From every beast I will require it, and from man. From his fellow man I will require a reckoning for the life of man. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. For God made man in his own image. And you, be fruitful and multiply, teem on the earth and multiply in it." Then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, "Behold, I establish my covenant with you and your offspring after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the livestock, and every beast of the earth with you, as many as came out of the ark. It is for every beast of the earth. I establish my covenant with you that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth."
Thanks, Mark, for reading, and thank you so much for being here and joining us this lunchtime. Well, the City of London Police have these posters. You may have seen them. I walk past one most mornings, and they want us to be on our guard against crime. And the posters say, "Not everyone is as nice as you." And helpfully, they're warning us not to be naive, to keep a lookout. But can you see what they're implying is the problem with our society? And that poster tells us that the thing wrong with our world is other people, especially the bad people who might mug you or con you. So watch out. The problem of the world is the people, in their words, who aren't as nice as us. And we find that way of thinking all around us, don't we? I saw a headline in one of the tabloids this week about Levi Belfield, the killer of Millie Dowler, and the headline simply read, "Pure evil." Surely the problem is people like him. So if, as the city police and the Daily Mail tell us, the thing wrong with this world is the really bad people, well, if only they could be got rid of, surely that would fix things. If we could lock them up and keep them there, wouldn't that put things right? And especially if at the same time, all the other bits of society could kind of be got working properly. So things like better education. That's a pretty common idea. Malala Yousafzai, the Pakistani teenager who was shot by the Taliban, is the youngest person ever to win the Nobel Peace Prize. And here's what she said in her speech to the UN. "We will continue our journey to our destination of peace. No one can stop us. We will speak for our rights and we will bring change. Let us wage a global struggle against illiteracy, poverty and terrorism. One child, one teacher can change the world. Education is the only solution." Just imagine, better policing and better education. And what about increased technology? Last week the BBC ran an article about Estonia, which apparently is way ahead of us digitally. And the article describes how digital technology has transformed how their society functions. And was kind of saying, look, if only there was greater access and cheaper technology. And the title of the article was, "Innovation Nation, Can Technology Help Build a Perfect Country?" So just imagine all those things, policing and education and technology and many others. Imagine if they could come together and just work properly. Surely that would give us the world that we long for rather than the world we have. Well, if you've ever asked those kind of questions or been optimistic about a new technology or a new political mover, if you see the problems caused by other people or you just get frustrated by other people's ignorance, or if you have some hope in human progress, or if you're ever just surrounded by people who do, then this is a good week to be here. Because we're looking at the end of the flood, and the flood is the most radical restart that anyone has ever seen. So just think about it. Our society locks up murderers and other criminals, but it doesn't just seem to prevent everything. So we could think, well, maybe we need a more radical approach. Maybe we're not kind of getting rid of enough people. Maybe we're not getting to people early enough. If only we could make sure we didn't miss anyone and didn't get to anyone too late. Well, as a solution to the world's problems, the flood takes that kind of thinking to the max. Because in the flood, God took Noah, the very best man on the whole planet, along with his family, and got rid of everybody else. If the problem really is the bad people out there, if the problem is that not everyone is as nice as us, then surely, if you took only the very best family on the planet and started again, surely things would be better. Surely, point one on the sheet you gave, given on the way in, hope. Surely there would be hope because this is a fresh start in a clean world. Because as the flood waters recede, there are reasons for hope. Because what we've been wanting ever since Genesis chapter 3 is to be able to go back to the beginning. Back before Adam and Eve sinned, before God cursed this world, before toil and curse and death and broken relationships. We want to go back to the beginning because in the beginning, when God made the world, it was paradise. And as the flood waters recede, we are taken back. Look at chapter 8, verse 13. In the 600th year and 601st year, in the first month, the first day of the month, the waters were dried off the earth. And Noah removed the covering of the ark and looked, and behold, the face of the ground was dry. And end of verse 14, the earth had dried out. If you were here when we looked at Genesis chapter 1, there should be bells ringing. Listen to this from chapter 1. God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. This looks like creation all over again. And then look at chapter 8, verse 17. "Bring out with you every living thing that is with you of all flesh, birds and animals, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." And then verse 19. "Every beast, every creeping thing, every bird, everything that moves on the earth went out by families from the ark." The earth, as it were, has been remade, and now it's being refilled. Just as in chapter 1, where God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things and beasts of the earth." And what is God's desire now for these animals? Well, chapter 8, end of verse 17 there. Just back over the page. "Come out, that they may swarm on the earth and be fruitful and multiply on the earth." And then chapter 9, verse 1, God's words to Noah. God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." God is saying just what he said back in chapter 1 when God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. So we've been longing to go back to the beginning of this story, the beginning of this world. We wish for a world free of sin and death and pain and toil. And if our personal circumstances don't do it, just a glance at the news will remind us of the brokenness and the mess all around us. We wish we could go back to the beginning. This week I went to register our new baby daughter. We called her Josie for no other reason than we like the name. But we saw in chapter 5 that Noah's dad chose Noah's name because it expressed his deepest longing to go back to the beginning. And Noah's name means rest or relief. And as his birth was announced, Noah's dad said, out of the ground the Lord has cursed, this one shall bring relief from our work and from our painful toil. Noah's dad was longing to go back to the beginning. As we follow the story, if you've been here, we've been longing to go back. And now we have this new beginning, full of hope, a fresh start in a clean world. We've not just put a few more people in prison. We've not just tried to remove a few unhelpful influences or start some social reform. God has started again. The world is fresh and clean. All those things we usually think are behind social problems are gone. There's no inequality, no bad city planning, no limited opportunities, no social deprivation, no political corruption. It is just Noah and his family, and the world is their oyster. But more than that, they can set up home and begin to prosper with real security. Because look at chapter 9 and verse 9. Not only is this world clean, but there is no risk of another global flood. God says, verse 9, behold, I establish my covenant with you and your offspring after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the livestock, and every beast of the earth. And verse 11, I establish my covenant with you that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood, and never again will there be a flood to destroy the earth. God wants them to be able to set up home confidently. And so verse 12, he gives them this sign for all generations. Verse 13, the sign of the rainbow. So when God sees it, he'll remember his promise. End of verse 15, to never again destroy all flesh in a flood. This fresh start in this clean world won't end in another flood. So there is hope. And so far, the City of London Police seem to have got it right. We've got rid of all the people who weren't as nice as us. In fact, we've got rid of all the people, except the very best man on the planet and his family. And things are looking up. But if you're feeling a little bit uneasy about such unrestrained optimism, then you're right. Because alongside echoes of God's good creation from chapter 1 and 2, there are also echoes of the world that we wanted to be free of. At first, this looks like a fresh start in a clean world. But before long, rather than feeling hope, point two there, we feel dashed hope. What looks so good turns out to be a false start in a cursed world. Because this episode doesn't finish very well. We didn't read the end, so here's chapter 9 and verse 20. Look down with me. Noah began to be a man of the soil, and he planted a vineyard. He drank of the wine and became drunk and lay uncovered in his tent. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brothers outside. Then Shem and Japheth took a garment, laid it on both their shoulders, and walked backwards and covered the nakedness of their father. Their faces were turned backwards, and they did not see their father's nakedness. When Noah awoke from his wine and knew what his youngest son had done to him, he said, cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall he be to his brothers. So it's a slightly bizarre episode. It sounds more like the end of a stag party, doesn't it, than the fresh new beginning that we've been hoping for. And although we could sort of dismiss the whole thing as a bit of childish nonsense, as if it's no big deal, if we've been reading Genesis so far, we can't do that. Because again, bells should be ringing. But not this time reminds us of a world before sin, but reminds us of a world of sin. So a lot's made of Noah's nakedness, isn't it? Verse 21, he lay uncovered. Verse 22, Ham saw the nakedness.
And it's then really dragged out. Verse 23, they walked backwards to cover their nakedness. And their faces turned backwards so they did not see their father's nakedness. It's almost as awkward to read as it must have been for them to do. So why is so much made of this nakedness and this uncovering? Well, again, if you were here back in the earlier chapters of Genesis, you'll remember that the last thing we were told before Adam and Eve rebelled against God was that they were both naked but were not ashamed. And the very first thing we were told after they rebelled was that they saw they were naked and were afraid. If the flood really had taken us back to the beginning, Noah's nakedness would have no shame, and Ham, his son, would see no shame. But we're not back at the beginning. This is a cursed world of dashed hopes. But it's not just the shame of nakedness. Verse 25, Noah curses Canaan. And when did the ugly language of curse replace the beautiful language of blessing? Again, immediately after Adam and Eve first sinned, as God pronounced curse, bringing toil and pain and broken relationships. And ultimately, the greatest curse of all, which is spelt out at the end of our passage, verse 29. All the days of Noah were 950 years, and he died. He died. With those words, any remaining hope that this was the world we wished for is gone. Death, like the shame of nakedness and the language of curse, did not belong to the paradise God made, but yet here they are. And so here we are, the world as it was before the flood. But if we'd been reading carefully, we didn't need to get to the end to have our hopes dashed. In fact, this whole episode with Ham is simply demonstrating what we were told in chapter 8 and verse 21. The Lord said in his heart, I'll never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Which is, if you remember, basically what God said back in chapter 6, before the flood came. We're told the Lord saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Nothing has changed. And nothing has changed in humanity, and nothing has changed in this world. And you can see that everywhere. Chapter 9, verse 6. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, for God made man in his own image. Remember Cain and Abel? The first thing we were told after Adam and Eve were cast out of Eden was that one of their children murdered the other of their children. And as soon as we're out of the ark, God says that murder will be as much a part of this new world as it was of the old. And even the command to Noah at the start of chapter 9, which is so like the command to Adam right back at the beginning, is also so different. They're told to multiply and be fruitful. But whereas Adam, in the unspoilt creation, was told he could have dominion in a kind of perfect harmony with the animals, in chapter 9, verse 2, Noah is told, the fear of you and dread of you will be upon every beast of the earth. There's no more prospect of that perfect harmony between man and beast, only struggle and conflict and danger and death. So the world the flood produces is not a place of hope, but of dashed hope. It's not a fresh start in a clean world, it is a false start in a cursed world. But you may be thinking, look, I know this already. I know this world is a messed up place where there's pain and toil and shame and people die. I know there's great wickedness and danger. I know all that. And so actually, I try and not think about it. So I didn't need to come here and hear that all again. And maybe that's true. But what we do need to hear, and what our world needs to hear, is not so much how messed up our world is, but that even something as comprehensive and as radical as the flood made no real difference. Just think about those possibilities we mentioned. Is the problem with the world that not everyone is as nice as we are? Well, if nothing changes when you get rid of everyone except the very best person and his family, then our world won't be sorted out by pointing a finger at others. As we've seen again and again in Genesis, the problem is in here. The problem, 8 verse 21, is that man's heart is evil and the flood just doesn't touch that. And if the problem is at the very core of our being, then education, for all its benefits, isn't going to really change us or our worlds. Just think of the education that Noah and his family got from seeing the flood with their very own eyes. If anything was ever going to make you stop and think and change your behaviour, that would, wouldn't it? But 8 verse 21, man's heart is evil. And education can't and doesn't change that. And technology isn't going to make perfect countries. If anything, as soon as Noah starts putting technology to work in his vineyard, its good potential is distorted and leads to the whole sorry episode with Ham. And if our hearts are evil, then more technology just gives us more ways to do evil, which is exactly what we see all around us. We may not need to be told that this world is a messed up place, but we do need to grasp that if something as far-reaching as the floods ultimately makes no real difference, then every less radical solution that humanity tries will make even less difference. Please don't hear me wrong. I'm in favour of policing, and I'm in favour of a justice system and education and technology for good. But the difference that these things make is so very small when you consider the goodness of the world God made, where there was no death or frustration or sin. These things can't do anything to get us back there, and can't do anything to change what's in here. One thing somebody decided that I needed for Christmas this year was this, the Essential Michael Jackson CD. And I know that makes me out of date in so many different ways. But CD 2, track 12, Heal the World. This place could be so much brighter. You'll feel there's no hurt or sorrow. Create a world with no fear. We could really get there if you cared enough. Heal the world. But if even the flood made no real difference to ourselves or our worlds, then we must say, look, no, it's not going to happen. Not even if we cared enough. We cannot rid this world of fear and sorrow and hurt. The massive restart of the flood didn't manage it. And the things we try will come nowhere close. And we must hear this, because unless we do, not only will we keep putting energy and hopes into fixes that will not deliver, but for as long as we think that they will deliver, we will not be ready to listen to God's fix. If we think we can sort this world out, then we'll ignore what God says, which is exactly what we see happening all around us. But once we accept that every attempt we make will end up as a false start because this is a cursed world, then we will listen, third point on your sheet, to the real hope that God offers, the real hope of a future start in a radically changed world. We've seen that any fresh start in this world, however much it's freshened up, will only end in dashed hope because it's a cursed world. So we need to get all those false hopes out of the way. But getting rid of those false hopes doesn't mean that we're left with no hope. I wonder if you're slightly puzzled by chapter 8 and verse 21. The Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Do you remember chapter 6? When God said the very same thing, it was the reason he flooded the earth. And nothing's changed. The verdict on humanity is the same. But now it's a reason not to flood the earth. Even though the flood has made no difference, God is still just as committed to his plan, to have a world for people to fill and enjoy. Even though we've made no progress, God is not finished. God has shown us in the flood, if you think back to a few weeks ago, that there can be no new worlds without cataclysmic judgments. That may sound too strong, but it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? If we want a perfect world, we've got to get rid of all the bad things. And God has shown us that in the way he rescued Noah and his family, that because of his mercy, when that judgment comes, he will provide rescue. But we've seen that even the flood isn't cataclysmic judgment enough. It didn't go deep enough into this world, which is still cursed. And it didn't go deep enough into Noah, because when he walked out the ark, he was unchanged. So as well as taking away our false fixes, which will never be as radical as the flood. God is showing us that we need something bigger than this. Something that will radically purge this world of evil. Something that will more radically transform the core of our being. And while this passage just leaves us wondering what God's going to do next, the rest of the Bible tells us that God is going to do something bigger. Turn on with me to page 1226 in your Bibles. Page 1226. Which is 2 Peter chapter 3. Page 1226. And let me read from the middle of verse 5. So page 1226, chapter 3, verse 5. The middle of that verse. The earth was formed out of water and through water by the word of God. And that by means of these, the world that then existed was deluged with water and perished. So that's what we've seen, isn't it? The world perished in the floods. But we've seen today that the world after the flood was no different. And so verse 7 there, Peter goes on. But by the same word, the heavens and earth that now exist are stored up for fire, being kept until the day of judgment and destruction of the ungodly. God promised to never send a flood again, but he has promised to send fire. That may sound terrifying, but we have seen that we need something more radical. And look on to verse 13 across the column. But according to his promise, we are waiting for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. That is what we need. Not a world that's kind of washed on the surface, but basically the same. Not just people who are transported, but not transformed. We need a new earth, and we need to be made righteous. A change to our core. The flood didn't go deep enough. So God has a bigger act of judgment to come. And Noah's sinful humanity was untouched. So God has a new humanity on the way. And just as he provided rescue through that first judgment, so too God has provided safety through the judgment to come. And a way to be a part of that new sinless humanity through the Lord Jesus, who when he returns to this earth, promises those who trust in him safety in that judgment and transformation inside and outside. And that is where our hope must be, in that future start in a radically changed world. Well, over to you now. There's a short break for coffee. If you have any questions, please scribble them down. Someone will collect them. Or you'll also see at the bottom of the sheets a couple of questions which you may want to discuss. And I'll be up in a few moments' time.
Okay, let's draw back together. Thanks for big stack of questions here for Ollie, making him earn his keep. Why did God not press the reset button fully when he could have?
I think he could have done. There's nothing that said he couldn't. I guess it shows us his commitment to the world he made. But I guess it primarily shows his grace, doesn't it? So that even though we didn't deserve anything, he could have just wiped out everything and kind of begun creation again. We see his grace, don't we, in acting in a way that we didn't deserve. We see that in a small way here. We see that much bigger as the Bible story goes on.
Someone else on similar lines, why, if God already knows that man's heart is evil, why does he still go ahead with the flood? What's the purpose behind it? Actually change anything.
Yeah, there are a few questions on that. I think so. God knows what's going to happen. It's not like it's a kind of, we'll try this trial and error style and see if it makes any difference. God knows what would happen. And I think it's because it's such a big lesson that we need to learn. It's so important for us to get clear on that God goes to all these lengths, even though actually we saw it doesn't make any difference. So that's at least a big part of it. So unless we get this clear, we will, as the world does, keep chasing after solutions that aren't God's solution, which means that people aren't even willing to listen to the good news about Jesus and his rescue, because they think that humanity, whatever it is, will be able to sort itself out. So that must be a big part of it. It's such an important lesson that we need to have this flood. Partly also, as we've seen in the last couple of talks from William, God is giving us patterns for that rescue. So he's beginning to teach us about what his judgment looks like and what his rescue looks like, so that when it comes, before it comes, we're ready for it.
Brilliant. That's really, really helpful, Ollie. Can you just say why we should then have confidence that the final solution, or the judgment of fire you mentioned, somebody's asked about that, how can we be sure that will actually work if this was not the real thing? How can we be sure Jesus is the real thing?
My first thought is that God says it will be. So just as God knew the flood didn't work, wouldn't work, he promises that this will be. So we saw in the words that Jesus tells us this is going to work. And because he tells us that it's going to work, because it's going to be a much more radical thing that he's going to do. So you'll see in Peter, when we read that, it's the language of almost total destruction and a new world being made. Elsewhere, God says, I'm going to create a new heavens and a new earth. So it is going to be, it's not just going to be this world, but kind of washed on the surface. But it's going to be a world that has been so transformed that it is basically like a new world. And he says that, it will be, partly the world will be new, but also he says that we're going to be transformed, we're going to be new. So if he just made the world new but left us the same, again, as we've seen, we would trash it pretty quickly. But God's promise is that when we become a Christian, he begins to change us. When Jesus returns, he will fully change us. And so there won't be anything wrong inside us, anything wrong around us. And so it will stay perfect forever.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. There's good question here. Can it not be said that man and the world are getting better and better? So you said that kind of we shouldn't invest in our energies in human progress. Can you just sort of really help us with that one? This person is looking at history and saying there is greater unity between nations, there are advances in medical and technology, all kinds of amazing advances.
Yeah, so again, don't hear me wrong, I'm not saying those are bad things. There are lots of ways in which life now is better than 100 years ago, let alone 500 years ago. I'm glad that we had a baby in the 21st century rather than a long time ago. Those are good things, and on some measures like that, life is better. But actually, are we really better off? Is there less evil in the world? You look at history, you don't have to look very long to see that actually as technology increases, the capacity for good increases, but also the capacity for evil increases. Yes, there is greater unity in some ways, but in some ways the world is a smaller place, and so there is more potential for the harm that man can cause harm. So I think it's all slightly subjective depending on which measure you look at, but I think if we're honest, the world isn't kind of fundamentally a better place. There are ways in which you can see progress, but there are also ways in which you can see things getting worse.
Brilliant. I think we should stop there. There's a load of fantastic questions here. Ollie, you're speaking again next week. Tell us why we should come back next week.
It's one of those passages that you think, why on earth is this in the Bible? Genesis chapter 10, it is literally just a list of names, Noah's children, his grandchildren. So it's one of those ones which is a great puzzle, because God thinks it's important enough for it to be in the Bible. We read it and we probably skip over it. In fact, I think it's fair to say, I was looking on the kind of talk archive here, and everyone's always done it, either with chapter 9 or with chapter 11. So obviously no one knows what it's about. So come back to see if we get anywhere with that.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Thanks for being here this week. So see you hopefully next Tuesday or next Thursday. And come and chat to Ollie if he hasn't answered one of your questions. Sorry not to get through them all.